You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 102.7 FM.
Canadian mining companies operate almost 1,400 projects in Latin America. Many of those projects have been controversial. According to one report, at least 100 Latin American communities have been in conflict with the Canadian mining companies at some time. The conflicts center on the forced relocation of local populations and environmental destruction. One problem for affected communities is the absence of mechanisms to settle disputes with the companies in question. Now a small community in Ecuador, Intag, is attempting a new tactic. Three residents from that town are suing not only the company in question, Copper Mesa, but also the company's source of financing, the Toronto Stock Exchange. In March, they launched a $1.5 billion lawsuit in Ontario court. And last week, the Ontario court struck down that lawsuit. Carlos Zoria is an environmental organizer in Ecuador, and he has joined us on the phone to discuss the lawsuit. Good morning, Carlos.
Good morning, Lorraine.
What allegations were contained in the lawsuit that you brought against the TSE and others?
Well, basically, and I have to clear that I'm not one of the plaintiffs. I work with them as an organization leader and so forth, and I went with them to Canada, and I followed the whole process so far. So just to get that clear, I think the main allegation was that there were a lot of human rights abuses and violence against community members. We had paramilitary-type people shoot a community residents. We had trumped-up charges against me, police raids, all these violent activities once. And in the case of Toronto Stock Exchange, we had warned them that this was a very likely outcome of the if they were to allow this company to list on the stock exchange. We had warned them before they listed, and with letters from authorities like the mayor of this county. And in the case of the company, I myself visited two directors in Toronto in 2007, and I showed them the violence. I had photographs of the confrontations between these paramilitary type forces and the communities. The people were shot. There were pepper sprayed. A friend of mine was run over by a car, a company car, and I showed it to these two directors. And they should have taken action to prevent further violence. They should have fired the general manager in Ecuador. They should have fired the general manager that's based in the U.S. And they did absolutely nothing. As a consequence, more violence ensued after my visit to the company. So the plaintiffs are saying that there was a lack of care to make sure that no harm was being done on the ground, and that we hold these parties responsible for it. They're definitely accountable.
Now, let's look a little closer at what has happened with the mine in Intag. Tell us about the concerns that local people have had with the mine that Copper Mesa has there.
Yeah, the concerns are based on the social and environmental concerns are based on environmental impact study done by Japanese experts in the 90s. Based on a small mine, we're talking, according to the study, and this is literally from the study, massive deforestation, so massive that it would start to dry up our climate. This is right in the study. Contaminations of rivers and streams with heavy metals, lead, arsenic, cadmium, chromium. We're talking about impacts to dozens of endangered species, including jaguars, spectacle bears, and the brown-faced spider monkey, among many, many other species. Those are some of the environmental. The social impacts, relocation of four communities, so people really became upset. The four communities would have to be completely relocated. Alcoholism and prostitution, this is all in the study. So there's more than enough reason to oppose the project on those grounds. But then people started seeing the divisions created by the company, buying out leaders, offering jobs even though there was no exploratory activities, and the horrific social impacts of that division. Families, brothers against sisters, against parents, because one supported the company, one supported the community's right to exist. So based on those in-your-face social impacts, a lot of people said, no, this is not the kind of development INTAG needs. And in fact, we have been developing a much more rational and sustainable development model in INTAG.
Now, you describe this social fragmentation where there's infighting in family. Did Copper Mesa have a role in fostering those divisions in the community, or was that a side effect?
No, they created, and this is fairly typical for these transnational extractive companies. They created these false organizations, development organizations, made up by people from the area. So those people were receiving funds, money from the company, so they had an obvious vested interest to protect their pocketbooks, let's say. And so that made them opponents of the people who were in favor of protecting community rights. So I can't tell you that, yes, they paid so-and-so to provoke social disharmony, but it couldn't be more obvious that that's exactly what happened. There was also, you know, the lawsuits against leaders there was a tremendous amount of measures to weaken, destroy the opposition that impacted the communities at every level. They also bought a lot of land, for example, 56 properties. Now, that definitely impacts the communities. Some people, they sell the land and they leave. So that starts to degrade the social fabric of these communities. And so they basically tried everything in the textbook to weaken and destroy the opposition, and that included creating social havoc at the community level.
Well, let's talk about opposition to the mine. How did the local people in your area resist Copper Mesa and its plans?
We had a few years to prepare for the coming of Copper Mesa. In 1997, the communities banded together, and they kicked out Mitsubishi subsidiary that was here on a government-to-government agreement to explore for minerals. They're the ones that found some copper in INTAG. And so they left in 1997, but we knew, and by we, I also am referring to the environmental organization I work for and I helped found. It's called DECOIN, Defensa y Conservación Ecológica de INTAG. We knew that the copper was still there, and sooner or later, somebody would come revisit and try to start again where Mitsubishi left off. So we prepared, working with communities, coming up with alternatives to mining, like shade-grown coffee, community ecological tourism. We supported some of the already existing women artisanal groups. And it's very interesting. Because of this threat, I think it helped us organize and envision a more sustainable future for INTAG. So we all worked very hard at creating alternatives and also becoming much more aware of the real impacts of transnational mining or large-scale mining projects in habitats like this. They're extremely biodiverse, very rich in water, and very steep, and also with a substantial risk for seismic activities. Based on these factors, even local governments oppose mining development in this area. Ecuador doesn't need mining. Ecuador's got unbelievable wealth, biological wealth, and wealth in water resources, cultural wealth. The last thing we need is for one extractive industry to destroy all this.
So at what point did violent conflict happen between local people who are resisting and agents of the mine?
You mean physical violence? Because
yes.
There is this other kind of violence.
Yes.
That, you know, death threat in the middle of the night, trumped up lawsuits against the leaders and on. That's also violence. The violence of dividing families, to me, that's violence.
Yes.
But the physical violence started, I think, in 2005. There was already confrontations. In December 2005, I think, was the first major confrontation where the communities burned down the Copper Mesa camp in Chihuahua Bajo. Why did they burn it down? Because the community asked the company, we do not want you in our communities because you're dividing our people. Please leave us alone. And the company, of course, instead of doing that, they just kept hiring more people and creating more opportunities for violence. And this is why they took that decision. So as early as 2005 is when the first confrontations happened.
Now, I understand that in subsequent confrontations that local people were injured as well by security people for the mine.
Yeah. In December of 2006, okay, let's go back to November. In November 2006, people hired by a security firm called Seguri Vital, who then in turn was hired by Copper Mesa, they got together a group of around 50 people, some from the INTAC, very few. Most were ex-militaries, what we call paramilitaries. They trained them outside Quito, and they gave them tear gas and machetes, and they stormed up the road to the communities of Cerro Pelado and Barcelona. And the communities, of course, banded together and blocked their way. And there was a fairly ugly confrontation with kids and older people being tear gassed. Nobody was seriously hurt, luckily, and the community repelled the presence of these paramilitaries. That was November. A month later, almost to the day, Copper Mesa hires ex-militaries dressed in they hire a company, a security firm, who then hires another security firm. That security firm hires this group of ex-military and from the coast of Ecuador, and they try to go into the Junin area. This is early December, 1st of December, 2nd of December 2006. The communities are waiting there, maybe like 15, 20 people, and you can see some of the footage of the aggression in the movie Under Rich Earth. There's maybe 15 or 20 people waiting at the road with a chain across the road not to let these thugs in. I mean, imagine if you were a community member and you see a bunch of people dressed up in security outfits with guns, shotguns, and 38 calibers, and so forth, trying to get into your community. The people say, no, you're not wanted here, you're illegally here. If anything, bring the police and we'll settle this. And so they try to go in violently and without any provocation. It's all film, luckily. They take out their pepper sprays and the 38s and they start shooting the community people. They wound Israel Perez, who's one of the plaintiffs in the lawsuit. They pepper spray Marcia Ramirez, who is another plaintiff in the lawsuit. And after shooting, I don't know how many hundreds of rounds, they backed down. The community, instead of running away, believe it or not, they stood by the roadblock and said, if you want to come in, as Marcia Ramirez said, you have to kill us. And these people decided not to take that step, and they backed down. But in the meantime, they called up more paramilitaries, about four more buses of these guys showed up in the town of Garcia Moreno that night, and a group of like 56 of them go into the forest. The communities, by this time, many communities of INTAC have sent people to support Junin, and about 110 of these community members go to the forest and they arrest these 56 paramilitaries. They take them to the community of Junin for 5 days until the authorities come and to legally be in charge of these thugs. That's what happened in December 2006.
Now, when we think today, sort of fast forward to the case that was brought, the lawsuit that was brought in Ontario, does that lawsuit then attempt to make connections that show that the TSX and Copper Mesa knew about these incidents and had responsibility in that?
We're claiming that based on the information that we gave them, that they should have known that violence was going to ensue. And they took no action to prevent it, basically. That's the main argument of the case. They should have known, given the history of Ascendant Copper, that was the company that Copper Mesa turned into, because we already were dealing with violence and social divisions and problems with the presence of Ascendant Copper before they listed, they should have known. Mm. And we warned them very clearly. The authorities warned them not to list. Because imagine getting $30, $40 million and coming down here to set up all these paramilitaries and the trumped-up charges against myself. It took a lot of money to hire all these people. The company hired an Army helicopter to deliver supplies to the people in the forest. It took maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars.
No.
So where do you get this money? In only places like the Toronto Stock Exchange.
Carlos, I want people to kind of have a sense of the direction that things are going in now, and I understand that the mine has been closed down by the Ecuadorian government. What about the lawsuit? Where does that go from here? Because it was struck down by the Ontario courts on May 7th. Where's that? What's going to happen?
Okay, there was never any mine because the community stopped exploration. So we're mine-free at the moment. And yes, they lost the concessions, which is also very positive. They were kicked out of the Toronto Stock Exchange, too, by the way. So there's a very positive development. Where's the lawsuit going? The plaintiffs directed the lawyers to immediately appeal the case. We're hoping that the next judge is more fair, because there's been obvious violence and criminal activity, and it's all, nobody is accountable according to the courts. Nobody, all these rights were violated, people were shot, tear gassed, with money raised in Canada. It was funded by a Canadian mining company, and yet nobody wants to take responsibility in Canada. So there's been a gross injustice. It's a perversion of justice that we hope to see corrected at the higher level.
Well, thank you so much for joining me this morning, Carlos, and I wish you luck in your continuing struggle, and also for the people who have brought the court case in Ontario.
Thank you very much, Lori, for giving me this opportunity.
Okay, take care. I've been speaking with Carlos Zorrilla. He is an environmental organizer in Ecuador, and he spoke to us this morning from INTAG Ecuador.